Chris Osborne. I'm the president of CTA, and it's my honor, and I'm super excited that you all are joining us here today, or this morning, or this afternoon, depending on where you are zooming in from. It's our inaugural co-creative forum. We've been talking about creating this forum for some time, and just to give you a little bit of quick background, it really was the born out of the monthly faculty meetings that we have at CTA, where all the faculty come together and we discuss various opportunities and learnings from our students, and often ask the question, you know, what else could we be doing for our students and our grads? And you know, we've looked at a whole different a whole cadre of different models, mastermind groups, and those sorts of things. But what we really felt we wanted to do was enable two things. One, continued learning and continued exploration of what is covered in our CCP, our Certified Coach Program, but also community building. And so a way for folks that have come out of, you know, a pretty intimate experience being the co-creative, I'm sorry, the Certified Coach Program, where you've got your cadre of fellow students that you're learning with and your mentor coach leading the way, and suddenly you're out into the big wide world, and the community is not quite as intimate and reachable. And so we created the co-creative forum as a way to enable that community and allow folks to understand that while their journey into professional coaching is a very personal one, that a lot of the things you might experience aren't necessarily just your own, and that growing practices and finding others that are growing practices, there's a lot to learn from one another. And so we're going to have topics monthly that we really feel will hit home. The reason we feel that way is we've asked our graduates, you know, what are the things that when you leave the Certified Coach Program, you wish you had more of, or areas where you continue to either struggle or challenge yourself relative to your own coaching skills or practice building. And so with that, it's like incredibly cool that we have Rhonda Hess here with us this morning. I've had the benefit of knowing Rhonda now for over a dozen years from the time that I first got involved and invested in CTA. Rhonda really is fundamentally the co-author and creator of the program that gave birth to the Certified Coaching Program. So the syllabus and the work that was the fundamental pieces of our curriculum, Rhonda is a huge part of and has been a big part of CTA ever since. And so I'm super excited that she's able to join us. She's beyond her role at CTA, she's one of the rock stars of coaching and really a perennial leader in terms of the ideas, the thoughts, and the practices around niching and creating niches within coaching practices. And beyond just creating niches, finding a way to seek and grow paying clients within those niches. And what I really appreciate about Rhonda, in a world of coaching where there's a lot of programs for sale, Rhonda's a real advocate and devotee of low cost, organic, what I would call real practice building. And so it really aligns with how we view the world from a CTA perspective. And really thrilled that she would invest a little bit of time this morning. You all saw she's offered some resource that you can access on the page. But what we're hoping from this morning is some time with Rhonda. She's going to spend some time, you know, giving some real particular views, perspectives, opinions, and ideas for you all. And what we hope is born from that is a conversation. And so just circling back around to what the Co-Creative Forum is about, it's really supposed to be 10 to 20 minutes of kind of content that seeds, with the sage of CTA resources, a great co-creative conversation and an open conversation that allows you to explore, ask questions, take risk. And within those conversations, what we would simply ask is, A, we start with agreeing that we're all going to continue to follow the ICF Code of Ethics, Be respectful of one another. Really think about co-creative environment. We encourage a lot of discussion, make space for others to have discussion, participate, but don't hijack the time on the call. And hopefully find some ways to build some connectivity that can last past today's conversation, go forward in your own practice building, and hopefully helping those within the community here build their practices. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rhonda. And again, I thank you all for joining us here this morning or this afternoon, and looking forward to the next 55 minutes or so. Rhonda.
Thank you so much, Chris. That just really touched my heart. And I'm so excited to be in the CTA family again here today and get to see your faces, Chris and Holly. And I just wanted to say hi to Holly. Holly's going to be doing some Zoom tech for us too. So she's on here as well.
Hey, everybody. Hello.
I'm kind of excited. I recognize a couple of you, which is really fun. And so fun to see you here today. You know, the main thing that I want to bring to you today, and we'll get as far as we can go, but you know, the discussion is really going to drive our time together. And that is two things. One is that a smart niche can really give you certainty, confidence, credibility, traction, you know, and a powerful mindset behind that can give you that sort of ability to be more credible and earn more. So I want to start with a mindset piece, because I don't know how long ago you actually, let's find out, how long ago did you graduate? So if you graduated this year, raise your hand. Okay. And if you graduated last year, raise your hand. Okay. And longer ago than that, did somebody graduate further than 2 years ago? Then, okay, great. So it's a good mix. And so for those of you that have just graduated, this might be a little bit more real for you and possibly scary. You might be feeling like you're in a bit of a difficult place. You've graduated, you've got these fantastic coach training skills that you earned from CTA, and yet you may not know exactly what you need to do next. And you may have chosen a niche with CTA and know who that is, and you may not know what to do with it now that you have your business. So let's talk about the mindset piece a little bit. And I'm a fan of what I call the CEO mindset. You know, each one of you, yes, you're a coach practitioner, but you also should be running your own business, right? It's really important to think like the owner of your business. And so what a CEO mindset is really about is taking responsibility for your financial success, you know, actually being responsible for that, making it happen, and setting intention to be strategic in all of your content, everything you post out there, everything you write, every video you do, and also other actions that you take. And then also to fully develop your niche and specialty to attract ideal clients who pay well. This is really important. I think a lot of coaches start with low pricing and you know, thinking I'm a new coach, so I'm going to start low. But I have a different philosophy about that, which is to charge as if you are already highly successful so that you can stay in business for the second year and the third year and the fourth. And I've also learned from trial and error that if you price low, those will not be the types of clients who you can carry through your whole business. You want to price so that people invest in themselves and so that you can earn enough for what you're doing that you can stay in business. And then the last thing is just, you know, stay inspired and make things happen. So I want to know from you guys, what do you think is a CEO mindset, or, you know, being the owner of your company? I'd love to hear from you.
I can go if nobody else wants to start.
Thank you.
So I guess for me, CEO mindset is kind of like, taking charge and kind of being responsible to kind of set the tone of your business and of your practice and doing whatever you need to do to kind of make things happen. I kind of think of it versus an employee mindset. So like an employee, somebody else at your company has determined the company values and has, determined your working hours and all that stuff versus, in our practice, we do all of that. And so I kind of look at it like that, like we're kind of in charge of everything and kind of coming up with exactly how we want our practice and business to be.
That's such a great point. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's so different from being an employee. Even if you're a salaried employee, even if you're a partner, sometimes there is a little bit less responsibility on your shoulders. In this case, at this point in time, the responsibility is on your shoulders. Who else has an idea of what might be a good CEO mindset?
Carlos, I do, Rhonda. Hand raised. Yeah. Sorry, Rhonda and I are working together for the first time on Zoom, but I have visibility to hand raises. So Carlos has his hand raised.
Yes, thank you. First of all, thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. I value it tremendously. CEO mindset to me is a person that, first of all, has a clear strategy or a clear strategy intention. Then a person that plans, then a person that organizes, and then a person that makes sure that execution gets made. In my opinion, strategy is really what you do. Strategy is execution. And execution is the only thing that ultimately counts. So the CEO takes care of the whole cycle from the very beginning until the execution. That's my opinion. Thank you.
I love that. And Carlos, did I have your name right?
Carlos, yes. My name, I'm Colombian. I'm in Colombia.
Yeah, so nice to have you here. Carlos, I really love what you said about strategy, because I'll be honest with you, I started my business in 1997. I was so into the coaching skills and just so enamored and starry-eyed, and I wasn't really thinking with strategy, It took me quite a few years, in fact, to realize that I don't just want to throw spaghetti at the wall, mm-hmm. And hope for the best, that I actually want to think about, what do I want to earn? What do I need to earn? What am I selling? What is the price of it? How am I going to have enough discovery calls to bring in those clients? How am I going to keep that going? It took me a while to figure that out. So I'm just wondering, is there anybody else for whom, this is not the natural, yes, I'm going to start thinking in strategy. I'm going to start, being the CEO of my company right from the get-go after you graduated from Coach Training Alliance.
Hi. So my thought about your question about being a CEO is that it's funny because I was just thinking about this the other day. If I want clients, I'm the one who has to get them. And if I want my business to be successful, it's on me and nobody else. There's no one else in my world that can make my coaching business successful except for me. So that's just my thought on that.
Beautiful. Yeah. And it sounds like you knew that from early on. So that's great. Thank you. Okay. Holly, let's go ahead and go with that first poll. Just going to put a poll up here. Great thing about polls is that they're anonymous. So your name's not going to go up there when you answer that poll. So just answer the question: next year, how much do you want to earn from your coaching business? And there's four options for you there. That's great. Everybody has answered. So it looks like it's a really fairly even spread about the first monetary, first three amounts. Less than 50, about 31%. 50 to 100K, 31%. 100 to 200K, 38%. Okay, good. So, you know, everyone has their own, and we can let those results go, I think, at this point, or share them, actually. Is there a way to share them out? There we go.
Okay, sorry, this is our first time, so we're learning, we're co-creating this experience. Just give me a thumbs up or thumbs down, those of you in the gallery, are you guys able to see the posted results? Awesome, thank you.
Great. Yeah, so I think everybody's seen them. I'm gonna go ahead and just stop sharing that. And I don't know if I'm doing that, Holly, or you, but it's popping up for me. So, you know, it doesn't matter what you want to earn. What's great about knowing what you want to earn or need to earn in whatever case that is that then you can figure out what you need to charge. So I'm curious about how many of you, just by a raise of hand, thought about how much you needed to earn, wanted to earn on an annual basis, and then thought about how many clients you could actually serve with your offer in a year's time, with the time you have, with the energy you have, and then backed into the price that you need to charge. Did anybody do that math? Great. So one person, no, two people, okay? Three? Okay. So I'm really glad that you did, those of you that did. And if you haven't done that before, this is an opportunity to do it. And we may not do the actual math together here because you don't want to necessarily share your particular financial situation. But I think the main thing is that it's really surprising for my clients who are coaches when I have them do this piece, because maybe they were thinking, you know, I'm going to charge $100 an hour, or I'm going to charge $25 an hour, or I'm going to charge for a package of coaching sessions that is $2,000. But then they haven't really thought about how many clients that may take to get you to the point where you are earning what you hope to earn. And, you know, this isn't about price gouging. It's not about charging so much that a client wouldn't want to work with you. But what I've learned, in very interesting to me, is that to a degree, the higher my prices are, the better clients I get, the more engaged they are, the more they really want to evolve and transform. They show up to sessions, you know, they do the work. Has anybody else experienced that? Okay, yeah. And have you ever experienced the opposite of that, where you are enrolling clients at a fee that seems right to you? You haven't, I know, me too. I've done that before. And then you find that the person isn't, either they don't show up sometimes for their call, or perhaps they show up, but they're not really taking on the responsibility of the client. Has anybody had that experience before? Would you mind one of you sharing that experience? I'm not sure who that was first. Is that you? I don't see your name on there. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share. I find when I do executive coaching that a lot of times when the company pays for the coaching, the client doesn't always know the value of that coaching and what a tremendous gift that they're receiving. So they might not take it all that seriously. They're just going along with what the company says they have to do. And it's not their own skin in the game.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I think and we have someone else who raised their hand. If you want to share too, go ahead. Sure, I'm sorry, Rhonda, I'm not seeing names, so I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. Rhonda, it's actually Chris. I think it's interesting. I've experienced it multiple times. I've experienced it first in the context kind of that Laura shared. And then the next time I experienced it was when I thought I was doing somebody a favor, candidly. And I came to realize that I was doing neither of us a failure. And when I, after working with that client for a while and being disappointed in the client, disappointed in myself as coach, I kind of came to realize that, you know, it is a co-creative process. And so to borrow Laura's term of skin in the game, it's hard to have a co-creative process when one party's not really invested. Yes. And so I think there is, people commit to perceived value, right? And so if somebody has booked, it's easy to cancel on something where somebody isn't very vested. It's very hard to cancel on something and not be prepared if you've invested a lot in it. And so that's why, from a personal perspective, I think healthy pricing and forward charging of prepackaged committed sessions are a positive. That's been my learning.
Yes, I agree, Chris. You know, paying upfront instead of paying in installments. I've even quit offering installments for quite a while now. And I've noticed that just the caliber of my client is so much better. And, you know, I know that with our big hearts, you know, sometimes we think, well, we want to make this available to everyone. And there are ways that you can offer some pro bono or some partial scholarship here and there if you want to. But I think it's really important for your bread and butter, for the most of your clients, that you're earning really well from each of those clients. So that financial piece is really important. And let's pop up the second poll, Holly.
Stacy Olson had a question.
I'm sorry, Stacy. I didn't speak to me.
No worries. I was just going to say, along the lines of when we're talking about investment, I've started almost exclusively using that word, investment. I don't say payment. I don't say, you know, pricing. I, as much as possible, try to avoid anything that puts a dollar to it, because it's not about the money, you know, in the end. And then also, as far as you were saying, like with pro bono or scholarship type work, then I use the word exchange. So it's an exchange of something, energy, or, you know, I'll do this for you, but, you know, can you do this for me in exchange? So it's really, a lot of it is so much about like just how we word it and then how we learn to see it. And sometimes you just have to use the word over and over again before it really sinks in. I've just found that to be helpful when it comes to the monetary aspect of things.
Beautiful. So investment, and if you are going to do something that's pro bono or partial payment, then exchange. And I love that language. Thank you so much, Stacy. Appreciate it. So for some of you who haven't had a chance to talk yet, I'm just wondering, how is this landing with you? How are you feeling about what you're hearing? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, I don't have names for all of you, so I can't say your name. Go ahead. Okay.
My name is Tricelle, and I actually graduated last year in May. I've done a lot of exchange, and one of the things that I struggle with, that I need some more strategies, was moving from exchange to investment. I kind of live in an area where, you know, I live in New York. There are a lot of other options that people go to. And a lot of people that I meet, they see the value. And then when it comes time to investing, their thing to me is, well, can my insurance company pay for it and whatnot? So I kind of struggle, you know, with that. I don't have a problem meeting the people and connecting with them, nor them seeing the investment. But when it comes to the financial piece, they would prefer their insurance company to pay for things out of pocket. Any suggestions or feedback on that?
Yeah, and I think there's layers of it. And let me get your name right. Is it Tristelle?
Tricelle.
Tricelle. So I think there's layers in it, Tricelle. And one of the layers is your target audience and niche. You know, who are you serving? And is it something that will inspire investment? And then there's also the other layer of the locality. So, you know, so many of the clients I work with decide to work internationally and really, you know, take their business online and make sure that they're getting out to a wider community so that you're not, and this is not the right word for it, but I'm just going to say it anyway, you're not just stuck with the region that you're in. And I think that's important. And in a moment, I'm going to ask everybody to share their, let's just do it now. Go ahead and in chat, and if everybody can find the chat feature, it's down below. You can just click the chat. And I think if you would all share your hub statement or your benefit statement, whatever you are calling that at this point, I think it would be really helpful. And hopefully I'm going to be seeing your names with it. But I think that some people are not what I call seekers. And unfortunately, there are some target audiences that are never going to pay off in a good way for you. Now, I don't know who your audience is yet. Do you want to say just right now, Tricel, who it is? Or go ahead and, go ahead and type into it.
Well, I kind of, listening to you, I kind of realized that it kind of made a shift, because originally, I was working towards, moving young adults, shifting them from, balancing life after high school. And what I found was that as opposed to working with people individually, I've actually done some workshops working with larger groups that seem to be more where more of my target audience seems to come more as a group thing, which I've never done group coaching before. So that is kind of strange to me, but that's pretty much where, I am, just moving young people from, from a safe environment, from a crazy environment to a safe environment, and being able to live life, especially for people with disabilities, living life beyond high school.
Yeah. And I'll give you time to type it in if you haven't so far, Tricel.
Yep. Okay.
I think they're all popping in there, and I really appreciate you for sharing this.
Rhonda, while that's popping up, I know Sam Davis had a comment that he wanted to share. Okay. And Sam, I think you are muted.
I'm sorry, I forgot what it was now. Thanks, I'm enjoying this.
Good. Sam, was there anything else you wanted to say?
No, not right now.
Okay, thanks. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Okay, so I think we have everybody's but Tricel so far. There we go. I think everybody's in. Do you think so, Holly? Okay. So let me just go ahead and just work with you just a little bit, Tricel, in that young adults, I know that they would really value your coaching. And they are probably not in a place in their life where they have a lot of disposable income. So the choice they have is either to try to pay your fees out of their pocket, or possibly to go to a parent or a guardian. And I don't love those last two situations, because here again, if they're having a parent pay for it or a guardian pay for it, then they're not investing. And so you might consider whether you are really married to young adults as a target audience, and or maybe go a little older in the young adults. But one thing I know for sure is that it's very, very difficult to go from low cost, low fee, or free to paid. And so, occasionally it does work, But on a day-to-day basis, very few people that you're working with on exchange or for free, you know, not a payment, are suddenly then going to start paying for something. So I think it's really important to consider, one, your target audience, two, whether you can go international and do something that gets you beyond your immediate region. And then three, you know, to perhaps start over with a paid structure. And I love what Stacy said earlier about, or someone said earlier, maybe it was you, Laura, about, you know, not having, oh, it was Chris who said it, not having a payment plan, but rather having people pay for a program that has an arc to it and some sessions to it upfront. And if you find repeatedly that people cannot or will not afford that, then you know that your audience isn't what I call viable. It's not a viable audience. It may be something that you can do group work with only at a certain fee range, but you're going to have a lot of clients to earn well. Does that make sense, Trisal?
Sorry, I muted you so I can hear you fully. Yes, yes. Because originally I was working with people with disabilities and, you know, the autism, you know, population. And I realized, you know, that they have enough services, you know, so it was like, well, young people would come in, and meaning young people from me, because I'm, you know, ranges anywhere from 18 to 30, you know, so I kind of switched off. So I'm still learning. It's a learning process.
It is a learning process, and you will get there. I know you will. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Holly, I'm wondering, let's go ahead and do the second poll, and then we'll talk about some of these hub statements. Okay, so the question is, how confident are you that your niche specialty will help you earn well? And the first option is not at all, only some days, 80%, I'm earning well already. Okay, just have a couple more people to get in. Is there anybody who hasn't decided yet? I don't know, Holly, is 12 right if you take you and I out and maybe Chris out? That might be right, huh?
Yeah, I think that's all right. And people should be able to see the poll results now.
Yeah. And, you know, I want you to know, if you're in one of those first two areas, this isn't unusual for, you know, being a new coach. It takes time to build a business. It takes time to find your sweet spot, to do the business side of things in a way that is sustainable and will sustain you. So no worries about that. I want you to know that in my first 3 years of business, my top annual earnings were $15,000. That was back in 1997, but it took me a long time to learn the how. And, you know, sometimes it's good to ask for support, and that's why you're here today. So
I have a quick comment about that regarding what Trisal was saying. I also started out with having a younger age group as my focus for coaching. The 20s were just what I loved to coach more than any other age group. But I realized I really just couldn't make a living with the 20s. So I made a shift, which I feel a lot happier about. I still actually coach in the 20s, but I use those as my pro bonos. So, and it's my giving back. Because I totally feel like, you know, I have it on my heart to give back pro bonos. So that's my group of pro bono, since I probably wouldn't have gotten paid very well from that group anyway.
And that is a great solution. And I don't want to indicate that no one can work with a younger group. One of my clients who's been a coach now for 7 years, who graduated from CTA, she targeted teenage daughters. Basically, what she targeted is parents with teenage daughters. And so the parents are paying for it in that case. And the parents are making sure that their daughters come to the sessions. But she loves her work. She does really great work with them. She does do it regionally and mostly face to face with them. And she gets the parents involved a little bit in that coaching. Now, 20-year-olds, that's kind of a line where they're probably not going to want their parents involved. But, you know, this is one of the tough things I think about niching is that not all niches will be financially successful. There are some ways to, you know, tweak things and adjust things so that they are more so. But when I work with my clients, I always just start with, you know, what do you love to do? What is an audience you really feel comfortable with? What is something in your personal story that connects and will, you know, raise credibility with that person? And then we look at the viability of it and we actually go out and do some market research. Because I found that without the market research, you can't always know whether your audience is viable or not. Okay, so let's just get rid of those results for the poll. And let me just give you a little bit more information. And some of this, I know that some of the people in this audience, you already know all this, so bear with me. And see that poll, I guess is the poll gone for everybody else now? Okay, great. So I'm a big fan of choosing a target audience that is narrow but deep. In other words, you have used language to refine the audience as far as you can go that fits with what you really want to coach about. But then to go a few steps further than that with the specialty. And so I think it starts with the audience. The audience is the most important group, right? That's who you're coaching. So you've got to know who your audience is first. And you really need to research your audience if you don't already know them really well. And then you want to focus on a big desired outcome or goal that audience has and the problems that are in the way of that goal. So I see that sometimes what coaches will do is they'll think about what they want to coach around and they'll build their language, you know, their hub statement language on their website about that. I'm a such and such coach and I coach about, you know, I coach about confidence and the whole site's about confidence. And it doesn't quite get to the big outcome the audience wants that's going to anchor everything else in the messaging, in the content, in the program that you deliver. And I'll say that executive coaching is possibly an area where you don't always have to get so much to the big outcomes of the individual. Sometimes it's more the big outcomes of the corporation that you're serving. And that is one of the difficult things about executive coaching is that it's a known quantity. People know they want executive coaching. Usually it is paid for by the organization. Oftentimes the organization wants to be somewhat involved in that coaching relationship, which is always a little ishy. the thing that I think is that if the organization is driving it, they're paying for it, you know, they're holding the purse strings, then they're going to want to know that the work you're doing with that individual is going to pay off in ways that are important to them. So there's some adjustments to be made sometimes when you know you're going to be working with an organization, really. And, you know, your client is the individual, but the person paying for it is really the organization. So the other thing that I think is really important and not always included is to leverage your zones of genius. What is something unique about you, something unique about your personal story that you can bring to the table? And this is a way that for new coaches, you can really amp up the credibility factor. You know, you may feel like, oh, I'm a new coach, I'm new to this, you know, I don't have much credibility yet. But sometimes your personal story, when that's leveraged into an audience and a niche, then you get that credibility by relationship, by relating to your audience. So let me just give you a couple examples of some coaches that I've had the pleasure of working with and how they have used their personal story to develop their niche. And then we'll take a look at these hub statements for a second. So a high-tech corporate leader burnt out to a crackly crisp. She had to quit her job and recover. So she took her health into her own hands and she found ways to heal from her own burnout. She did a lot of study. She took a lot of classes. She did a lot of work on herself, really put her focus and awareness on her own development, on her own. And now she works with high achieving women leaders to reduce stress and build greater capacity to advance their careers. And so I think what's great about her hub statement there, she's got high achieving women leaders. That's who she was. She's got reduced stress because that's a big part of what puts, what lands that person in a burnout place. But she still has some tangible outcomes she's helping them to build greater capacity, you know, in their bodies and their minds to advance their careers. So it's a great target audience, great niche, great specialty. And it's really leveraging a zone of genius for her, which is, you know, you might say it's wellness coaching, but she doesn't call herself a wellness coach. She lets her hub statement really speak to what she does and her program speak to what she does with her clients. And there's an arc to it. And it's, you know, it's the program, I think, is $3,975 for 4 months. So with a price point like that, a coach can earn a decent income. So let me give you one other example. A co-founder of a trauma-informed parenting organization married a man with a child. She didn't have any children of her own. And suddenly she became a step-parent and she was thrown into chaos with the birth parents and, you know, the birth family and disciplinary issues with the child, and she had never been a parent herself. And so she found that really difficult and she really applied herself to the problem and developed great relationships with the step parent or with the child's bio family, developed a great relationship with her partner so that they could co-parent and she could not step on toes, you know, find a great place kind of in the middle to both be an important part of the child's life, but not overtake the bio parents and what they want for their child. So she developed a business over that. And again, she used her personal story, her experience, and her transformation to develop her target audience and niche. So I just want to pause for a moment and just, you know, raise your hand in the in Zoom if you have a reaction to those two coaches and their target audiences and niches. Yeah, Tricelle?
Sorry, learning how to work this Zoom too. You made some valid points and something I actually never, you know, thought about, because I never thought about, not that you want to get too personal, but using my own personal, you know, highs and lows or successes and failures to help with, you know, a coaching niche. I never really thought about that. So being the mom, you know, that hit home for me, we talked about her being a single, you know, I mean, being a step parent and whatnot. I thought of it, whereas being a mom, a single mom, with a child with a disability, whether it's a learning disability and or a physical, you know, disability. And those seem to be the type of parents lately that I've been meeting, but I never thought about targeting them as my audience. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And I just want to say, if you were to target that audience, you'd want to think about how you could be different from the doctors and therapists, you know, because you don't really want to be competing for mind share and money with those resources. So you'd need to think it through. How could you come at it differently? Something that your audience really, that audience really needs and wants, especially wants, you know, what is the outcome they're looking for that isn't served perhaps by those other organizations? And then thank you, Tricelle. And then I think Chris, you had something.
I was just gonna say, I think along the lines of what Tricelle just was talking about, I think you can, one of the reasons I love the term co-creative is remind ourselves as coaches that we're co-creative, right? And so in a situation as dynamic in a market and perhaps a niche that Tricelle just described, I think what's distinct about your offering potentially is that you're a co-creative solution provider, which is different than a clinician or a therapist or others. And you're more in support, you're more not working for or prescribing to, but instead supporting the actions of that person. And so I always feel like coaches are somebody you're kind of hiring onto your team when you look at the playing field of what you're trying to get done in life. I believe when it comes to, you know, kind of, I would say laying the hook in terms of those potential clients, that there's three things that coaches who excel oftentimes show. One is the ability to understand the point of pain of the potential client. And that may come from their own life experience or having coached around the issue before, which leads to an affinity. So the ability, you don't have to be like or have lived the same life or be in the same place as your potential client, but you have to have some affinity with that client. And affinity, I like the term affinity because it allows you a broad entry point to the relationship of relatability. And then finally, and I see this in my own work when I do CEO coaching, is the ability as a coach to be vulnerable. And so that, you know, you're very open about the fact you're not coming as somebody who is on the affinity side or the kind of relatability side, that you can relate to their issue, but it's not like, oh yeah, I saw that issue and I succeeded, follow my path of success. I think the power is in the ability to be vulnerable and say, I faced that challenge, or I can appreciate that challenge having been in a similar role, and it's really hard, right? Yeah. And so allowing folks to understand that, I think it helps build the structure. And I actually also think it helps begin to build the value, because coaching is an iterative, dynamic process. And, you know, the one thing we know about human behavior is that, you know, everybody's script is different and everybody's story is different, even if we're in the same movie, right? And I think as coaches, we're in a powerful position to deliver value that way. And I think being able to package ourselves from a niche perspective in a way that we fit into a story, I think that's the, if somebody can envision where they want to be and we can be part of that journey, I think that's the power of the niching.
It is. Yeah. And I think also sometimes when you can draw on your own experience, you know the questions to ask, you know. you can formulate those open-ended, pithy, powerful questions, because you can take a moment to go into that curiosity space of where you were in that place and say, you know, what do you think about this? Or how would you feel about this? Or what would you do in this case? So I think that's one of the nice things for newer coaches, is that it gives you sort of this field of knowledge you have in a personal way that you can draw from, not so much, as you say, to step them through exactly the way you did it, but more to say to someone, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Let me ask you a question now. So, Margaret, I think you had your hand up too.
Hi, Rhonda. Hi, everybody. I wanted to just say that I think the power of story is huge, and the power of connection with one another. Vulnerability is a very attractive resource, and courage to be vulnerable. So for my niche, I am very much about sharing story through the podcast, having people come on and share their story so people feel less alone. But I just want to say that I think that what sets us apart, I'm a therapist by background and doctors and so forth, is our ability to be a more human co-creator connection and not have to be such a blank slate. So I think it's really quite a positive thing that we share parts of our story and who we are when we show up in a room and even online.
I agree, especially when you're attracting clients. To share your story helps not only humanize you, take you off the pedestal, but also there's that just immediate sense of she gets me or he gets me, you know? So I think that's really, really true in a podcast, in a blog, in a video. That's a great place, or, you know, on social channels, that's a great place to share your story. And on your website too, you know, as long as you're still in service of your clients. Yeah. And Holly, you had an idea here. You said, Holly, did you have something that you wanted to add to this, or did you want me to ask that question about the 80%?
Oh, I was curious about the 80%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So a few moments ago, we did a poll and there were some people in the room who were in that 80% place. So 80% of the time, maybe 80% of the income. So who raise your hand, who actually did say 80% in that poll? Okay. Chris, and I'm sorry, I don't know your name. In the orange. Yeah. I wish there was a way I could get their names on here.
Yeah, that was Colleen.
Colleen,
yeah. And Alicia.
Great. Thanks. Go ahead, Colleen.
Yeah, I think I'm just at a point where if what I'm doing right now is working for one client, I presume it will work for more. So that's why I said 80%, but I'm still kind of testing the market to see how things go.
We'll have more data soon.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. And is it Colette? No, I'm sorry. Who was the other person?
It was me, Alicia.
Alicia, sorry.
That's okay. I put 80 because it's a rough estimate. I also know this, my niche can afford something like coaching. And with some of the people I've spoken to, it's also become part of their benefit offering at the job to have paid coaching of their choice. So 20% is, I haven't really started to getting paid the way I, you know, hope to be once my business gets going. So I just don't know. That's why I put the minus 20 on there.
Perfect. And Chris, you also had a comment.
Oh, I mean, those folks on the phone that know me will laugh. I'm always 80% because there, as soon as I get to one place, I always start to think about kind of what potentially is next or should be next. And so that's why, you know, circling back to your CEO mindset, I mean, I think that idea of being proactive and biased to change, that always keeps me at that 80% for me is a good number, by the way. That's why I answered it as such.
Yeah, it is a good number. And you notice that those answers on there, I crafted them not so much to have a scale as just to have solutions, because I think that, this business, being a coach, being a human being, it is a developmental process. We are constantly growing to new phases, and it's a little uncomfortable in that growth to the new phase, but it is also really exciting. And it's an opportunity to really look into yourself and figure out, well, am I liking what I'm doing? Am I doing the work I wanted to do? Is there anything I can change about this? Can I earn more so I can stay in business longer? Can I, to always just take the time to look at some things. I wanted to just say, we're all starting to run out of time, aren't we, Holly? Yeah. And so I wanted to just wrap things a little bit. But before I do that really quickly, was there anybody I missed in wanting to comment about anything? Okay. So the PDF that I intended everybody to have has some of what we talked about today and a little bit more. And I think it's worthwhile for anyone who is still tinkering with your niche and specialty to look through that. And, there's some information here about the type of audience that you need to be looking for, somebody who's easy to access, someone who is a seeker. A seeker is someone who does invest in their personal and professional growth, and someone who's eager to evolve. Not all people at all times are in that place. And so when you develop your target audience, your specialty, your niche, you want to be sure that you're thinking that through a little bit and making sure your target audience is viable. And if you can, then infusing your story, your zones of genius. Zones of genius is one of those things you don't always know. So if you don't know what your zone of genius is right now, don't worry about it. It'll come to you. But I think that think about, as you are working with your clients and as you are building your businesses, how could you really leverage your strengths, your passions, your talents, and differentiate yourself from other coaches partially that way, as well as through your audience and your specialty. Should we end there or anything else?
I think just for everyone that's on this particular call, we will post the rebroadcast of this video and also ways to connect with Rhonda if you want to know more about the types of services she provides and how to connect with her. Those will be posted. And then underneath that posting of this rebroadcast, you will have an opportunity to continue the discussion, right? So if you want to share your hub statement and to get feedback from different forum members about what they think or ideas or suggestions, that's what that's there for. So Rhonda, maybe you want to share just details broadly about how they can get in touch with you. Again, we'll provide it in writing if people want to work with you.
Just reach out to me at prosperouscoach.com. It's as simple as that, prosperouscoach.com. And you'll find my website there and all sorts of things to look at. And I would love to chat with you. But I just really appreciate this group for how vulnerable you've been, how real you've been. And we didn't quite get to those hub statements, but I know that you'll be able to do that in an upcoming co-creative forum call.
Great.
Yeah, that's great. And I just wanted to say thank you from the community of CTA to Rhonda for joining us at the inaugural first co-creative forum. Totally appreciate everybody's investment of their time today. Very much look forward to seeing you next month. Next month will be about group coaching. And then the following month, I'll lead a session on executive coaching. And we will continue to fill these months with the content that we hear from our grads and from yourselves in terms of topics. So thank you so much. Really appreciate your investment, as we said. And from everybody at CTA, we wish you a great September.
Many blessings. Take care. Goodbye.